6 never, ever marks the spot.
I am altering the deep. Pray I don't alter it any further.
Most of the intelligence community doesn't believe he exists. The ones that do call him the Winter Soldier.
I'm Batman.
Dracarys.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Top 5 Report, the podcast that would like to let everyone know for every Christmas light lit before Thanksgiving, an elf kills a baby reindeer. My name is Drew. I'll be your host for the evening. Along with me, as always, is my brother, Peter. How are you, sir?
I'm here. How are you?
Good. I'm all right. How was your week?
Yeah. It's been a week, but I'm excited to be here and talking about nerdy fun stuff. So nothing too cool. Exciting in my neck of the woods, except at my household, we've killed a lot of baby reindeer already. We're always like, as soon as it's November 1st, Halloween decorations come down, Christmas decorations go up. So,
so you're one of those early bird people. Like, you and I haven't, we haven't, like, I guess, celebrated Christmas in a very long time. Like, because, people get married, families happen, that kind of stuff. We don't usually see each other's houses around the holidays, you know. So, yeah, I am a day after Thanksgiving kind of a person. So Thanksgiving happens and boom, tree and everything goes up. This year, because we're hosting several Thanksgivings, we might wait until after all that crap is over before we do that.
Nice.
So we shall see how that plays out.
Yeah, I don't know what it is. Like, for I'd be fine with putting up Thanksgiving decorations. We just don't have any. So I'm fine with Thanksgiving being a Christmas part one. Totally cool.
I think it's more of too much stuff going on in terms of families and traveling and all that nonsense. And it's like, why am I putting this stuff up early? You know what I mean? Like, just wait till the holidays over. So
right on.
Yeah. Anyway, we have a ton of stuff to cover tonight. So people don't want to hear about our decorating. Let's be real. So what'd you watch this week?
Yeah, that's true. It's not a decorations podcast, but I watched a couple things this week. The first one I want to mention is kind of out of nowhere. I watched the movie F. Mary Kill on Hulu. I don't know if you're familiar with this at all, Drew, or...
Oh, you know, I think I saw it sitting there and I didn't really know what it was, so I just kind of passed it. But yeah, please go ahead.
It's a pretty fun sort of like murder mystery slash horror sort of movie about a there's like this mysterious, killer, like serial killer out there who is known as the Swipe Right Strangler. And he's going around and killing women that he's swiped right with on Tinder or other dating apps. So it's basically like he goes on a date with a woman and then, you know, takes a turn for the worse and they end up, getting killed and left behind or however you want to phrase it. But this movie's about this main character girl who was in an 8-year relationship and she just finally became single and she's back out on the dating market. And meanwhile, there's this crazy serial killer situation going on in the area that she lives in. Pretty fun, like clever little movie. There's some of my favorite parts involve there's this true crime podcast that's reporting about this strangler the whole time. And the main character, she's like constantly listening to this podcast. And you'd think she would be in fear of like actually putting herself out there like on Tinder and going on dates. But no, she just puts herself out there and she just keeps meeting random men. And there's a point in the movie where... there's like these three main guys that she's seeing and she starts to suspect that one of them is the strangler because they all have like traits that make you believe that they're like the serial killer. And so that's where the mystery unfolds, like where it's like, okay, like, which one is the murderer? And then they bring in, like, the funny, like, dialogue with her and her friends. Like, who is the F? Who's the Mary? Who's the kill person in this sort of trifecta that she's gotten herself involved in? But this was a really fun mix between, like, kind of a romantic comedy and, like, a murder mystery horror sort of thing. So I thought this was really fun. It also has like some really good, like any good mystery, like it's got some really fun twists, and I didn't really see the twist coming. So this one's pretty fun if you're just looking for that sort of like lighthearted murder mystery, if you will. So this one was pretty cool. I did watch one other thing, but I didn't know if you had any questions about F. Mary Kill, but I definitely recommend it. It's a pretty fun little movie. So,
all right. Well, I will keep that in mind.
Put it on an ever evolving list.
Yeah, exactly. That's the thing. Like, I saw it sitting there and was like, I'm going to pass on that. And I'll, you know, but yeah, go ahead.
It was one of those things that we just put on a whim, and it ended up being pretty fun. The only other thing I've really watched this week is, and I won't go too long into this, but I'm up to date on Welcome to Derry still. TV series that's going on right now. I can report back from last week. The people in the show do refer to the town as Derry. So not Deary, but Derry. But as far as like in the old It miniseries, I'm not sure what people said. So that's something else I'll have to report back about. But
I feel like it's spelled Deary, but that's me.
Yeah.
Anyway,
so this show last week, basically what I reported about it was that it was really fun, but there's a lot of gore and shock value, right? Like the first episode felt like it was going so much for shock value, and some of the gory like scare scenes and stuff were just so over the top. Like there was the first scene of the show shows something that I did not expect. Like I did not expect to see that on TV. Like it was pretty crazy from a shock value standpoint. And in the second episode, the scares are still there. The shock value is still there, but the storyline is starting to get really intricate and like really interesting. And like the second episode, like the story's getting just so good. I think it rivals the It movies, like the recent It movies. I actually think I might like this show better than the movies, because I think it's the case where this is an HBO show, so it has that HBO TV show quality behind it. It has that quality control. It has that level of like see how the show's written and stuff like that. So basically you're taking like one of my favorite horror movies and turning it into this like really well-produced HBO series, and it's freaking awesome. So that's my main takeaway for this week. I don't want to go on too long, but the writing in Welcome to Derry, starting with episode 2, has just gotten so good, and I've just become fully engrossed in it, and I can't wait for the next episode. The other cool thing, and I won't go too long on this either, is the scares, like the scary scenes in this episode started to get really cool as well. And a lot of them kind of have like this Nightmare on Elm Street sort of like dream sequence aspect to them. That's because I feel like Pennywise and Freddy Krueger are kind of similar in the way that they scare people and stuff, besides that, like, Freddy Krueger's scaring people within their dreams, and, you know, Pennywise appears in real life. They both deal with, like, weird, surreal elements and stuff like that, and putting people into weird situations. But both of the main, like, scare scenes in the second episode were very Nightmare on Elm Street, like, feeling, in my opinion, in, like, the best way possible. The last thing I'll say is if you watch this show, definitely watch the post-credits, behind-the-scenes bits that they always have for HBO series, because Welcome to Derry, a lot of these crazy scares are actually practical effects, or it's a mix between practical and CGI, and there's some really cool parts. And at the risk of spoiling anything, in episode 2, the pickle monster, I'll just leave it at that because I don't want to spoil anything, but the pickle monster, they actually built as a practical effect, And they definitely show that in the behind the scenes bit. And it's so amusing to see the weird pickle monster, the way it worked practically. And I'll just leave it there.
Okay.
So I don't know if you've watched this at all yet, Drew, but no, the show's yet, awesome but so all right. far. So
yeah, I've not checked it out yet, but all right, cool.
Nice.
Yeah, is that it that you've checked out this week?
Yeah, that's about it for me this okay. time. So
I had every intention of watching more this week, but that was not in the cards for me. But I did start the second season of Nobody Wants This. That's that Kristen Bell, Adam Brody show, where he's the rabbi dating the non-Jewish girl and the family. And it's like the navigation of that relationship with the religious life back style and all that stuff. So the first season was I loved the first season. It's absolutely hilarious. A great, like, it's heartwarming and charming on the romantic comedy level, but it is absolutely hilarious in a sitcom kind of level. It is so good, so well written, so smart. So I highly recommend it. The second season, I saw some criticism, and we were talking about it. My wife and I were talking about it a little bit. She's like, I don't know why everyone's complaining about this show. I really like the show. I'm like, they're complaining because it's not as funny as the first season. It's just as good. It's just as smart. It's just as well written. It's just, I'm not finding this season as funny. But it's still got its comedic moments. And I just wonder if that's because the show knows what it is now. So it's like building to these like laugh out loud kind of moments, if you will. So I don't know. So far the season's pretty good. I don't know how long the season is, but I'm maybe like 4 or 5 episodes in. So yeah.
Nice.
But yeah, that's really the only new thing that I checked out because everything else was very, it was more of a busy week. And I was like, well, I got to get something new in. So, because I don't want to come empty handed. So, yeah, there you go.
Awesome. Well, I can say that show, I haven't watched any of it, but I feel like name recognition wise, they're really killing it because I've seen it pop up. I don't know if it's on Netflix or what streaming app, but I've seen it pop up and that name does stick in my head. Like Nobody Wants This. It's just, and when I see it, I'm like, oh yeah, Nobody Wants This. I bet that's a pretty good show, but I haven't taken the plunge with that one yet. But yeah, good stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, that brings us to the end of that segment. You want to talk about tonight's news?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Because there is a bunch. Some of it's like quick hit type stuff, but let's knock this out. Okay. So did you don't watch Jimmy Fallon at all, do you?
Like I mean, Tonight Show? I've before.
Not
but
like
not on a regular basis, no.
I used to watch it on a legit regular basis, and yeah. Now I've gotten the way everything moves so fast, I kind of just subscribe to it on YouTube, and then I watch the clips when they're just like, hey, Jennifer Lawrence is on, or hey, yeah, Robert Downey Jr. is on, or you know, you watch the quick celebrity interviews. So that being said, Jennifer Lawrence was on this week promoting her new movie, Die My Love, with Robert Pattinson. The movie looks incredible. I look forward to watching it. But she was on there promoting the movie, and she was talking, and he asked her about this project she's got coming, Miss Piggy. Jennifer Lawrence and Emma Stone are producing a Miss Piggy movie. And me being the Muppet fan, this sounds great. I can't wait. This sounds awesome. Let's do it. When she was on Fallon, she was talking about how when cancel culture really hit the head and like the real peak of everything, and everyone was like, oh, this person's getting canceled, that person's getting canceled. She said that there was a moment, she's like, they've never done like a Miss Piggy centric Muppet film. What if we did one where Miss Piggy gets canceled? And I'm like, that is brilliant.
Of course, so, yeah.
Right, because like the Muppets navigating that, that's absolutely hilarious. So I hope this is a thing that's going to like really go into fruition and take off as opposed to just being a pipe dream. So we'll see.
Nice.
Let's see here. Brendan Fraser and Rachel Weisz are reuniting for The Mummy 4. Filmmakers Matt Bettinelli and Tyler Gillett, who call themselves Radio Silence, are set to direct the fourth film. They are known best for Ready or Not and reviving the Scream franchise. I don't know if I saw Ready or not. I don't know if you did, but the Scream revivals have been fantastic. These are two guys that understand source material, and when you hand them a project, they're just like, "Yeah, we can get the we understand the assignment." So this could be a really cool thing. So yeah, we're getting Mummy 4. Thoughts? I don't know. Yeah, have you seen Ready or not?
Yeah, I have. That's the one with the girl who marries into the family, and they have to play the game like on the wedding night. Like,
yeah,
they draw
I know.
A card and play a game, and then.
Yeah, I know what the movie. I know what the movie's about. I just never seen it. So.
Okay, for some reason I thought you had seen you, or I thought you had said you had seen it before. So, Ready or Not is super fun. It's like a really bombastic, just like fun horror movie. It kind of gives me like vibes of like The Babysitter on Netflix, just kind of like one of those like funny but super fun to watch sort of things. And of course, the newer Scream movies have been awesome too. So this just sounds really promising, you know? Yeah. Really excited to find out more about this as it develops.
Yeah, we'll see where that goes. Sad news for gamers. Grand Theft Auto 6 has been pushed back to November of 2026. My money is on the fact that it's going to be pushed to 2027. That's my personal opinion. But hey, sorry, gamers, your game's been pushed back. However, there's a Grand Theft Auto movie in development at Paramount. I don't know, like, I don't, this is that thing, like, where we talked about when they announced that there was a Call of Duty movie coming, and yeah. You stack it up with other military movies, and you're like, well, it's the brand recognition of Call of Duty. We've seen gangster movies, car heist movies, Fast and the Furious movies, like, all that kind of stuff, like, Grand Theft Auto, again, this is a brand recognition thing, at least in my opinion. So there you go. However, it will be an original story set in the universe with game accurate locations and production design. So if you've been following the franchise, they will, you will have the fictional cities. You will have probably character mentions. You'll have, you know what I mean? So maybe that's where you're really going to get the, iconography, but
yeah, I kind of agree with you though. Like, if you're going to do video game adaptations, let's do some like sci-fi or fantasy titles. Like, why are we doing Call of Duty and Grand Theft Auto? That being said, if I don't think this will happen, but if it was like Michael Bay directed Grand Theft Auto, I think that would be like the greatest thing ever. I mean, I might be in the minority there, but I think that'd be super fun.
No,
so.
you might. Yeah, that might be a thing that would be really cool. And I know people groan when you hear Michael Bay sometimes, but that might be the best thing. It really
but if
might.
You, like the guy who like Bad Boys and the Transformers doing a Grand Theft Auto movie, like I think it could be pretty great.
Yeah, agreed.
Just like...
All right, what should I tell you about next? The Russo brothers will executive produce the Rambo prequel film. And we have this guy, Noah Centineo, if I'm pronouncing that right. Noah Centineo is in final talks to star as young Rambo. I mean, he looks all right. But this means we're going to go Rambo. Like, he looks okay. Like, this is that thing where it's that thing where they tell you who's going to play the character. And you zoom in on the face and you're like, I mean, I guess I can see it. But then there's something that they see in the casting room that we don't get to see. So when we see a picture of a person and we like Heath Ledger is the Joker, everyone is like, no. And then they saw the movie and they're just like, oh, that's what happens when you do your casting properly. So, but because this is a Rambo prequel film, that means it's going to be probably Vietnam centric because he was post Vietnam, right? When he came back for the original film. But if it's Russo brothers executive producing, they know how to do action. They really know how to handle some of these military type stuff. So I feel like it might have a different visual language than the other films, but I think Russo brothers know what they're doing for like that kind of thing.
Yeah. Really interesting story. I actually don't know if I have any thoughts besides anything you just said. I feel like you kind of covered it all. But yeah, very interesting. It's cool that the Russo brothers are involved in this.
I feel like I bring the news every week and you just give me your reactions. So.
Oh no, no, fair enough. I just feel like you literally said everything I think I could add to this one. So
oh, okay. How about, are you a K-pop Demon Hunter fan?
To an extent. My kid loves it. I've watched most of the movie, but out of order. So I want to do like a sit down and do a proper rewatch. But from what I've seen, I can say I am a fan. So there's that. How about you?
I feel like every parent has watched it out of order. I've walked into the room several times. I'm pretty sure I've seen the movie in its entirety.
Yeah.
I'm not 100% sure. These songs are incredibly catchy and they play Golden a lot on the radio. But Netflix, K-pop Demon Hunters 2 is for sure. I don't think anyone saw that not coming, but it won't be out till 2029. So sorry, guys, you're going to have to wait.
Yeah.
So hopefully there's some good songs in there. Hopefully they're all bangers, you know.
Sure. By the way, this is totally normal. With a lot of people are freaking out with how long that production schedule is, but with animated properties, this is like super normal. Like 4 years for a sequel that is not like that crazy long. So it does seem really long, but I mean, people can't get enough of the first one right now. So what's the rush? You know.
I know. This is. All right, two more news stories, and then we can hop over to the list of the night. So this one I'm really excited about. We have Gremlins 3. Did you hear about this? It's a thing. It's a real thing.
Okay.
Releasing November 19th, 2027. Christopher Columbus, or Chris Columbus, is returning as director, and Steven Spielberg, executive producing. Zach Lebowski and Adam Stein. I really know I screwed up that guy's Zach's last name, but they are the writing team behind Final Destination Bloodlines, and they're working on the script for Gremlins 3. Final Destination Bloodlines was, in my opinion, probably one of the better Final Destination movies. I think it was really good. I think it lended very heavily to what we all wanted from a Final Destination movie, especially for not having one for a while. So I think they know what they're doing. So I have faith, but I'm excited for more Gremlins, man. This could be really cool. I do hope, my hopes on this are, let's go back to the feel of the first movie. The second movie, as much as I enjoyed it, was campy fun and comedy more than like the horror part. And not that we want to go too horror, but we want it to be, we want the Gremlins to be the menace that we know they can be and not a funny menace, you know? So,
sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. They definitely have to have some comedy bits, but yeah, we want it to be a little bit more brutal, a little bit more scary. So I'm hoping for the same thing. With the writing crew that you just mentioned, I feel like that's probably what it's going to be, but I'm just shocked that this is actually announced. The weird thing is, I almost feel like we've talked about Gremlins 3 before, but maybe just nothing was ever confirmed. So this is super exciting. Obviously, on this show, we're going to be watching this right away, and we're both going to be super excited about it. But awesome to just see this is actually announced. You know what I mean?
Yeah. All right, man. And here I come with a science story of the week. Yeah.
All right.
They say evolution has a deadline. In a world where oxygen tanks still weigh on us, one capsule has changed everything. We have nanotech hemoglobin pill engineered to let humans breathe underwater. This pill dissolves in your bloodstream and makes the sea your domain. From shipwrecks to reefs, humanity just found a new frontier. But rewriting biology comes with a silent cost. The ocean asks for more than just breath. This comes from the sources Nature Biotechnology, Volume 42, Issue 7, published in 2025. They say that the first trials for this pill, 45 minutes underwater, no tanks, no panic. The only, like, that sounds amazing. For someone, like, for me, like, all right, you, me, our whole family, we spent years like hanging out at the lake and swimming and boating and all that kind of stuff. Snorkeling, you know, like, hey, let's go try and dive and try and find turtles under the water. And, you know, that kind of stuff, chasing fish. This sounds like the greatest thing for someone like myself, who's been on a swim team. This sounds awesome. My fear is, what is the cost in terms of not financially, but what if your body won't readapt?
Sure.
You know, you know what I mean? Like, you take the pill and you're just like, oh, cool, I can breathe underwater. This is crazy. It's not like you can breathe both ways. Is your body now all of a sudden able to like extrapolate oxygen on both levels? You can go in and out of water. Or does your body adapt and you can never leave the water? That's the scary part. What are your thoughts, dude? Because I was like, this is awesome. Wait a minute. So,
I mean, I have similar thoughts. I wasn't even thinking about like the sort of readapting to the air. I was just more thinking like, you are taking a pill that's going to affect like your body chemistry and stuff. And I was thinking more like, what's the long term?
That's like rewriting your DNA, right? Like,
Well, that's what I'm thinking is like, what's the side effects? You know, do you take this pill? It's really cool. And then 5 years down the line, you have some crazy disorder that's just like, you know, you can't keep up with. This is really interesting. But I think what I'm saying is, I'm not going to be the first person to sign up for this. But it does sound like super awesome, just being able to hold your breath. Well, I mean, even I guess you're breathing underwater, so it's not even hold your breath as long as you want. But the ability of like how much you can explore and stuff without a scuba tank underwater, like, it's really exciting. But I think we're both just kind of cautiously optimistic, smartly, for this one. So
yeah, well, if you get a chance to learn how to breathe underwater, there you go. Part of me is like, I really want to try it. Like, you know what I mean? Like, but I wonder, like, how does it work with like, all right, so the nanotech allows you to breathe, because like ocean water is different than like a swimming pool versus a lake.
Yeah.
Right? You're extrapolating into action in different ways, but like pools have chemicals in them the way like oceans, and like we're talking chlorine versus like some, you know, there's different degrees of chemicals in like all water, if you will. So that's a really interesting thought process there. But yeah, so there you go.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, this brings us back to the end of the news. Makes our front half of the show pretty short, actually. But you want to talk about tonight's list? Because I feel like that's going to be the longer conversation anyway.
Yeah, let's go for it.
All right, everybody. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
Now for the top five.
All right, Peter, this one was my pick. I thought about going for a year, and we're running out of like some of the older years. Like, I don't know how far back you and I are eventually going to be able to go. We could probably dig into the 70s a little bit, but there's going to be a point where some movies are just going to be too old, and like we haven't seen enough to really be able to dig super deep into like some of the far past stuff. But one of the things that we do have is where we grew up, right? 80s, 90s, that kind of thing. And we're getting low on the 90s numbers, but there are years we haven't done yet. But I noticed we hadn't done 1992. And I thought to myself, let's do it. Now, what I was not expecting, and I knew this was going to be a big year, I really did. What I was not expecting to happen was the sheer number of movies. 92 very well might be one of the best years for movies ever in the history of the industry. It really might. When you look at some of the massive movies that came out, and we're going to get into a lot of them, but my list, my short list, was so long that I had more trouble doing honorable mentions than I did anything else. I literally was like, I feel like I should just pick two movies that are worthy of honorable mentions and not worry about, and just like pick my five and then just pick two movies that I think are just, hey, don't forget these are out here. These are cool. You know yeah. what I mean? Forget the favorite part. Like, hey, these movies are cool. Like, like you know,
number the short list, throw a D20 a couple times, and those are your honorable mentions.
Yeah, like it was right. It was crazy. Like, I'm just gonna like pick two that I think are good movies, and we'll leave it at that, and that'll be the end of the conversation. Because you know, hey, we just want to mention them. You know, that being said, I saw 92 of the movies in 1992. Which I thought was kind of funny. And the best picture this year was, or for the year of 1992, was Unforgiven with Clint Eastwood. So yeah, what do you feel about this list, man?
Well,
why are you laughing?
I'm laughing because I saw a 36, so I'm way, way lower than you. But I think okay. part of the reason is 1992 is I was 6 years old when this year happened. And I know there's like some really great movies that came out, but while I was putting my list together, a 6 year old inside me kept going back to like certain movies that I loved growing up. And like, even though like there's some amazing movies, like I remember I toyed with like putting like the adaptation of Mice and Men on my list. And like, cause that's like an amazing movie. But then I just kept coming back to like, man, but I really grew up with this other like goofy kids movie, and I think about this goofy kids movie all the time. So I feel like my list, very heavily, I want to say, is I don't believe it's the best movies that came out, but they are my favorites, and that's what I kept coming back to. So I feel like I've got a goofy assortment with being able to realize there's some like really amazing movies that came out this year. It was a huge year, though. And a lot of really fun stuff. Last week, I mentioned that a year like 1992 makes me think of things like Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles and Surf Ninjas and ninja stuff in general, because I remember that being really big when I was around that age. None of those movies came out this year. This was actually a year between Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2 and 3, but the movie Three Ninjas did come out in 1992. Doesn't make my final list, but still a really fun movie that came out this year. So there you go. That's my vague
thoughts. I expected that to make the final list. Three Ninjas also made one of my honorable mentions. You know what I mean? So, yeah.
All right, then.
I feel like my list, and just to be clear, we had movies this year, like Newsies, Basic Instinct, The Great Mouse Detective, A League of Their Own. We had the first Captain America movie, Buffy the Vampire Slayer, Death Becomes Her, Three Ninjas, Lethal Weapon 3.
See, what I can't get, I can't figure out if you're being like joking or being serious.
No, I'm being dead serious. Like yeah. Home Alone 2, Malcolm X, Last of the Mohicans, Passenger 57, yeah. Bram Stoker's Dracula. Like, I'm just like listing off like big ones that people like, yeah, you know, that people are like, oh, that came out. You know what I mean? It was a massive year. Captain Ron. I freaking love Captain Ron. I don't know if you ever saw that. The movie's fantastic. You know, so
that's what I think is funny is like, I agree, like every movie you just named is fantastic. But when you're mentioning like Bram Stoker's Dracula in the same breath as Three Ninjas and Captain Ron, that's what's throwing me off. Because usually I feel like you're like, we've seen such fantastic movies this year as like Dude, Where's My Car? And, you know, like you always pick like the really goofy ones. So this was a good variety, I guess.
Well, this was that thing I just wanted to kind of go, hey, guys, this year was so big. Like, you know, and that's that hard part about it, you know? So anyway, I do have two honorable mentions. I assume you do as well, unless you're like, nope, this is the one time I don't have any.
I have two as well. So
okay, cool. This is my pick, so you have to go first, my friend.
Yeah, let's go for it. Okay, so my first pick. So here's what I mean when I talk about like pretty goofy kids movies. Even though I actually think this movie's really, really good, really well animated, like a great cartoon movie from the time. But one of my honorable mentions is Fern Gully, actually.
Yeah.
Fern Gully, and this is one of those things where I saw it like in kindergarten. I remember thinking it was really, really fun. It was really cool. But the thing about Fern Gully is this is a movie that I haven't seen for like such a long time, but I think about it all the time. Like, it's one of those movies you see as a kid and it gets imprinted into your DNA. And like, I seriously think about Fern Gully all the time. And I know there's the joke that like Avatar, like James Cameron's Avatar, is really just Fern Gully in space, which is kind of accurate, but it is that sort of thing. It is that sort of archetypal story. It fits a lot of the same story beats as like the story of Pocahontas. I think there's definitely some other like tales that it fits the beats of as well, but Fern Gully, it's such a fun such a fun animated feature, and it's basically about this guy who's, if I remember correctly, he's basically like a lumberjack who gets shrunk down and joins this like fairy world in the forest, and he learns that like he basically learns about conservation and like, you know, not chopping down the rainforests and stuff. And think about like the Avatar movie all the time. And absolutely. but it is really that, like, the reason this makes an honorable mention is because the movie has stuck with me so long. It's something that I think about a lot on like a weekly basis, which is really weird, but that's why it makes my final or my honorable mention. So
sure, sorry, the Avatar thing, like,
it's totally true. We're not the first ones to say it, but it's totally accurate.
This movie's fantastic. I actually, I can't remember the name of the movie. Fern Gully was a huge inspiration to George Lucas for, do you remember what the movie that was? He had some like, it was some like, I don't know if I remember, it was stop motion or just a straight computer animated kind of thing that he did. I just am drawing a blank on what it was.
I know exactly what you're talking about. It was a musical, It was CG animated.
I don't remember it being a musical, but that's okay.
I think it's not like Strange Magic or something.
That sounds real close.
It is a similar like style movie though, so that's a good thing to call out there.
So Fern Gully. All right.
There you go.
My first honorable mention, it's a movie called House Sitter. This is one of those things where I couldn't pick. There were too many movies to choose, and I only had two honorable mention slots. So I went with House Sitter because this was one of those, like, it's that rewatchability thing where I've seen it so many times and it was just really good. This is, so here's the plot. Steve Martin plays an architect who, builds a house for his fiance or the girl he's dating. He surprises her with the house when he proposes, and she says no, and he's completely devastated and doesn't know what to do. So now he's got this house that he built, this massive like mansion like type of house, and Goldie Hawn is this like drifter who stumbles onto the house and decides to start living in it and squatting in it. And Steve Martin and her have like the interaction of like, what the hell are you doing in my house, kind of, you know, conversation. And in the midst of it, he's got to explain why there's a strange woman living in his house. And she jumps the gun and goes, oh, we're dating. Hi, nice to meet you, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, and it kind of forces them into this thing, but it makes his old girlfriend jealous. So he's like, ooh, I can use this to leverage her. Like, you continue staying in the house, but we're going to fake this relationship to get her to like want me back and all that stuff. And I'm not going to spoil how the movie goes. Ultimately, it's a really fun rom-com, but it's absolutely hilarious. And it's a really fantastic comedy. I watched this several times, mostly because it was just on TV and it was just a good movie. So like, it would just like hit the rerun or whatever on TNT several times, that kind of thing. And you just kind of watch it because it's on, right? Because we didn't have that many channels back then. So I just wanted to mention this movie because it's a really fun one. So there you go. Honestly, nice. Martin, it was always good comedy.
I've never seen this movie before, but it looks really fun. I was looking up pictures of it, and I've seen a lot of clips from this movie. Like, they used that's to have, the... like, what were you saying?
Well, I was going to say, that's the thing. You were six, so there's a chance that you stumbled in and out of the room several times when I was watching it.
No, I think it was one of those things when you would have like a VHS copy of a movie and they'd have like all the trailers before the actual movie would start. And sometimes you would have, right, like, on. Whether it was like, Warner Brothers or whatever the brand was, they would have like just like a montage clip of a bunch of different like scenes from different movies, and it was to kind of just like promote their brand. I feel like The House Sitter, like, I don't know if we had an old VHS. I feel like I've seen so many clips from this movie without actually seeing the movie, but yeah, good to know finally what it's called, I guess.
Yeah.
But anyways, yeah.
Go ahead, man. Second honorable mention. What do you got?
Yeah, so my second one, a movie we've talked about on the show multiple times before. I actually went with Home Alone 2, Lost in New York. This one's a classic. I feel like everybody knows it and loves it, so I don't have to say too much. But this movie definitely has sequelitis. It definitely has that level of, like, we need to do everything from the first movie, but slightly different. They definitely have that going. But I still love this movie. I think that Daniel Stern and Joe Pesci are still hilarious. Macaulay Culkin's still hilarious. I love Tim Curry and Rob Schneider and all the hotel staff. I think this movie is just, for just those like funny character beats, man, that's what I really love staff, about this man. Film.
Holy
you know?
Crap. Yeah, the hotel staff, dude. Holy crap.
Yeah.
Yes, this is the exact same movie turned up to 11. It really is. It's like, hey, we're just going to do it again. That's what everybody wants, and we're just going to do it. What I did notice, and I don't know, which really interesting, and I noticed this after the probably 100th time watching the movie, because it just is on around the holidays, is at the first movie... In the first film, Daniel Stern goes to the back of the house and Joe Pesci goes to the front of the house. And in the second movie, Joe Pesci goes, you go in the front, I'm going in the back. So they switch places. But all the traps are identical per which direction they went to. So all the fire stuff... So all the fire stuff is now in the back of the house. So when Joe Pesci goes around to the back, it's all the fire stuff. And then Daniel Stern to the, you know what I mean? Like, it's all this, like, it's like the same traps. It's just, they're flipped backwards. So when the burglars switch places, they're going through the exact same stuff as they did to the first time around, turned up to 11. I just thought that.
No, that's amazing. I almost like wish I was in that writer's room to just hear the discussion. Like, all right, we need to come up with some new traps this time. And like when they came up with the idea, no, we can just do the same traps, just the opposite guy does them all. And right. Then there's the discussion like, is that hacky? Like, is that like hack to just use the same things over and over? Or is it like perfect? Is it such a smart decision that we have to do it? I think that's a really funny thing.
It's like when Joe Pesci's like, all right, I'm going in, and he gets burned on the head, just like the first film, right? So the first film, the blowtorch to the head, and then he puts his head in the snow to, like, cool it off, right? Well, in this movie, blowtorch to the head, and he's like, oh, shoot, I'm on fire, and then he goes to the toilet to dunk himself, but the toilet's filled with gasoline, right? So it's that kind of like, holy cow, you know, that kind of thing. It's really funny that they're just like, how do we make this more painful? The fact that those guys survived through those films blows my mind. But yeah, absolutely. Home Alone 2, great movie. All right. So I went with, for my next honorable mention, A League of Their Own. Everyone should know this movie. I don't need to go too heavily on it. Sports movie, women's baseball, that first women's baseball league. Gina Davis, John Lovitz, Rosie O'Donnell, Madonna, Tom Hanks, phenomenal movie. It's probably one of the best sports movies there is. It's one of the funniest sports movies, but it's also incredibly heartwarming and charming, and the casting spot on, the writing spot on. It's so smart. And it has one of those great followings. It's also a movie that, like, I will stop turning channels because it's on, kind of thing. So yeah, A League of Their Own. Great movie. I know we've talked about it before, so I don't know if we need to really dive into it deeply, but
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah, I agree with all that, and it's definitely a channel stopper. Like, it's such a good movie. It never gets old, like, no matter how many times you watch it. So you're spot on there. This past Halloween, I actually did see a Rockford Peach while I was trick-or-treating, though, with my kid. One of the moms that we walked past on the street was wearing, like, the Rockford Peaches uniform. I was like, that's pretty awesome. So good stuff. But, yeah, great pick. This movie is just phenomenal. So awesome.
Right on. All right, man. First actual pick of the night. Now, I'm going to warn you before we get started. Every single pick on my list, we've talked about heavily. So I might be able to go through these quickly. I'm assuming the same as you. But again, this year was so huge with movies. Like, seriously, like, anyone who's into film, if you've never really thought about 1992 as a year, look it up and you're going to go, oh, my God, it's crazy. So anyway, go ahead.
Which makes it funny that we haven't done it before. So there's that.
But, I know.
So on my goofy selection of movies that really are my favorite movies from this year, I'm just going to go in order of what I like the most or least to most. But, oh, I guess these are ranked, right? So there you go. I don't necessarily think that my order's at, like, objectively accurate, but it's just the ones that I like the most. So my number five pick for the night is Disney's Aladdin. This movie, amazing, super epic, such a fun movie. As a boy growing up, like, as a boy who loved animation and loved animated movies, some of the Disney movies were so princess focused that Aladdin just felt like such a breath of fresh air. Like, I was like, finally, like, you know, I loved Cinderella, I loved Snow White, I loved all that, but Aladdin felt like a boy's movie that I could really get into as a kid. It's also just amazing animation, amazing soundtrack. It's got all that Disney quality that you would expect. But yeah, it's just one of the best animated movies of all time. Super fun, great characters. We've talked about it before, so I don't want to go too, like, on and on with this one, but Aladdin was just, like, amazing at the time, and I still love it to this day. So there you go. There's my number five pick.
Yeah, agreed. Aladdin is one of my absolute favorites. I do want to point this out. I found this out earlier, like last week. I found Raja the Tiger has more screen time than Princess Jasmine. Which I thought was really kind of funny, which almost makes Princess Jasmine the sidekick character of the film. She's a supporting character. I just think that's really interesting.
It's all about the cute animal sidekicks. We don't care about the main characters here.
I know, right? I know. So this is one, my first pick of the night. This is one you're going to go, of course, because of who I am and what we talk about on the show. But this comes down to, I don't know if I would say this is like one of my favorites of the year, but this also comes down to rewatch ability and the amount of times I've seen the movie. This is one of those ones that you're just like, it sits with you, it hangs with you, you watch it every now and then. And that's Batman Returns. This is a little bit nostalgic for me and a little close to the heart because this is the very first Batman movie I saw in a theater. And I've seen them all subsequently since, obviously, but this was kind of like one of those firsts for me in terms of me being a Batman fan. I absolutely love this movie. I don't know if we really need to go deep dive on it, but Batman Returns, just because of the nostalgia, my fandom for the character, my fandom for the films, the rewatching of it. Yeah, this is one I like kind of rewatch every year. I actually rewatched it fairly recently because my kid is trying to watch through all the Batman films and it's been kind of fun. So, yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's a Christmas movie, so great
it is
time
a Christmas
for the
movie,
season.
So, yep.
But yep. No, Batman Returns is awesome. We did a whole episode. I know we did a full episode on Batman 1989. Did we ever do like a Returns follow-up? It's been a while since we recorded that, so I can't remember.
I don't think we did. I'd have to go back. I'd have to double-check the list, but no, I don't think we did a Returns follow-up, so...
Yeah, absolutely. I love Batman Returns, though. I think it's you take Batman 1989 with Tim Burton and like the sophisticated just masterpiece of that film. And you go into Batman Returns and it's almost like Tim Burton, like just taking off all restraints and just like making something awesome and making something memorable, bringing to life these amazing, like bombastic characters like Catwoman or the Penguin, but giving that dark Tim Burton twist on them and affecting these characters in a way that still lives on. Like, this movie still feels super relevant, but it's got such a fun, cartoony, sort of like esoteric design to everything. I just love this movie. So great call. We've talked a lot about it, but yeah, one of the better Christmas movies out there. So good stuff. Yep.
As I want to point out before we continue on, is that this is a Batman movie that was attached to that it had a Happy Meal attached to it. So they had all the McDonald's toys and stuff for the kids, but it's also a movie about killing kids. So the irony strikes.
Well, that's the genius of Batman the Animated Series, because when this movie came out, my mom was not going to let me see Batman Returns. And what did I want to watch most was Batman Returns. And I had action figures from the movie. I had the McDonald's toys. I just couldn't watch the movie itself. And that's why Batman the Animated Series was there to be my savior, to give me the Batman content I needed, because I wasn't able to watch this movie at the time. So,
yep. All right, man, what's your next pick of the night?
Yeah, speaking of Christmas movies, I'm going to go into a movie I've talked about many times on the show. One of my favorite Christmas movies of all time, but I went with The Muppets Christmas Carol. This movie is great. It is it's The Muppets, so there's the goofy, like, Muppets bits in there, but for the most part, it's a very faithful adaptation of Charles Dickens' original work. It's such a fun story. You have Michael Caine as Ebenezer Scrooge with an amazing performance, acting off of the Muppets. And, I love how Michael Caine, like, everything he says and does in the movie feels so sincere and so heartfelt. And that's not always the case when you have somebody acting with puppets, you know, but he delivered so well. Like, you can see, like, how seriously he takes like an acting job, because he's not hamming it up. You know, he's delivering his lines like he fully believes what he's doing as Ebenezer Scrooge. This movie has amazing music. Like, the songs from this movie are so memorable. Great set design. Like, it's such a sort of like, exaggerated, expressive version of like, you know, like an old timey London, if you will. But it feels very Muppety. It feels very believable and gritty. Like, I love the set work in this movie. It's all just like, it's all awesome. Like, I love this movie so much, and that's why it's my next pick for the night. So there you go.
I struggled so, so heavily to put this on my list or not put this on my list. Being the Muppet fan that I am, it was literally like, man, what do I do with this? It was really hard. So it just unfortunately made my short list. But yeah, dude, I'm with you. This is one of the best Muppet movies that there is. And every time I hear that someone's going to make a Christmas Carol movie, like the new Johnny Depp one coming out, sure, I bet it's good, but I bet it's not Muppets good. You know, that's that thing, man. So I don't know. The songs were amazing. The acting was amazing. Not just for Michael Caine, but the Muppets themselves. It was just so well put together. So,
yeah. Absolutely.
Keeping with the cold movies, I went with The Mighty Ducks.
Nice.
Such a great feel-good sports movie. The Flying V. The ragtag underdog team of the kids going together, and they're going to play some hockey and face off against the Hawks, right? Yeah, the Hawks. I'm like, what was the evil team in the movie? I always want to say Iceland, but that's the second film.
That's the second one, yeah.
Yeah. But they, you know, this is Gordon Bombay, you know, he's going to be the unlikely coach that's going to go in and like be like, well, hey, I was a hockey player when I was your age and I know a thing or two, and he's going to put the team together and he's going to do it. And it's going to be awesome. Such a good movie. A lot of great comedic bits, but it's still a wonderful, heartfelt sports movie. So, yeah, The Mighty Ducks. It's fantastic. There you go.
Yeah, absolutely. It's hard to add too much to what you said there, but great movie, like one of the best sports movies. This is one of those movies that when I was in grade school, everybody loved the Mighty Ducks. Like, it wasn't like even a question, do you like the Mighty Ducks? It's just like, without a doubt, we all knew that everybody loved it. And no, it's just a great underdog story. It's a great sports movie. I haven't watched it for a while, to be honest. Would you say it holds up pretty well? I don't know when the last time you watched this was, Drew.
I don't remember the last time I watched it either, but I remember, yes, I do feel it still holds up. I feel like a couple of the jokes are a little outdated, but that's just because slang terms and stuff like that change so drastically. But
we're a far click away from 90s slang, I guess. So
I know. However, okay. I think that's the one thing that doesn't age as well. But
yeah,
it really matters when you break down to the minutia what the movie's actually about. So
yeah,
there you go.
Yeah. Awesome.
All right, man. Well, what do you got for me?
Yeah, so I'll transition out of cold movies, as you put it, and transition into a real cool movie. And this is a movie that I freely know is not that great of a movie, but I love it so much, and I'm sorry, but it's one of my favorites from this year, and that's the movie Cool World. And we've talked about this movie a lot. It's such a fun story about you have characters going from the real world into this weird cool world, comic book world. It feels like Roger Rabbit on crack. That's really what the movie feels like. Ralph Bakshi was like the head animator slash director of this movie. He's well known for, you know, doing like the Lord of the Rings animated movies and stuff like that. He did such a cool job on this movie, like when it comes to character design, when it comes to like a crazy animated world for this. But this is basically like it's a hybrid film. It's pretty much like if Roger Rabbit was rated R, and that's pretty much what it is. But I just love this movie. The comic book fan in me, the artist in me, the B-horror movie fan, like, I just love this movie. It is weird as shit. It's one of those great movies that if you know somebody who hasn't seen it before, you can sit them down and show them Cool World just to see what their reaction's gonna be once the credits start rolling. But I think this movie is so much fun. Not the greatest movie, but one of my favorites from this year. So there you go.
Yeah, you know, first off, you bring this up quite often. And yes. I think the whole podcast, and I was like, oh, he's going to talk about Cool World. I'm going to tell you, when I was doing the research for the year and like what movies came out, and as soon as I saw Cool World, I'm like, we're talking about Cool World tonight. So yes, absolutely a great movie. Roger Rabbit on crack is the best way of wording it. Yeah, good stuff, man.
This is also another one that when it came out, I wanted to see it so bad, but my mom wouldn't let me. And that's what my list is, mostly like movies I loved growing up and movies I wasn't allowed to watch growing up. So then they made my list because they were my favorites as an adult. But yeah, Cool World is great. Anyways, what do we got next, Drew?
All right, the next one we got, sticking with worlds, I went with Wayne's World.
Oh, classic.
Yes, absolute classic. And this is one that not only holds up, but this strikes that chord of one of the best, in my opinion, comedies that's ever been made. I don't know which one I like better, Wayne's World 1 or Wayne's World 2, but this movie definitely, like, I feel like I think this is the better of the two movies, to be completely honest, but they just, taking a small Saturday Night Live sketch and turning it into a movie, this is like one of those home run sort of things. Everyone knew what they were supposed to do. We understood the assignment. You have the guys from Saturday Night Live going, this is how it's supposed to be. You know, it was so smart. Put together, and you're just like, yeah, I want to watch that show. I wish, like, it's kind of like, I wish Wayne's World is a show that we could actually watch on a regular basis. It'd be amazing. And then, yeah, following those guys around, it's so good. There's so much great stuff to it. So from the comedy bits, everything. So yeah, Wayne's World. We've talked about this several times, so I'm like, I don't know what else to add on to it. But yeah, like I said, several of these movies we've talked about, but this is one of those huge years of stuff. So
yeah, well, you're not going to believe this, but we actually matched with Wayne's World, and that for my, I guess that's your number three spot. So this moves into my number two slot, Wayne's World. And for me, besides everything you just said, for me, rewatchability is is a big factor here. Like, I remember I saw Wayne's World, like, I remember we rented it, like our family rented it when it came out on VHS, which is kind of weird looking back, because I don't think, like, my parents would have been that interested in Wayne's World at the time, but I think it's like me and you and our other brothers just wanted to watch it, so that's what we did. But I loved the movie back then. I still love the movie now. I've told this story before, but when I was in college, like, I went to art school, and I used to stay up late in my apartment. And I would just be sitting in my bedroom working on drawings and watching movies. And at the time, I had an old rickety TV and a VHS player, and I had three movies to my name. I had three VHSs in my room, and those VHSs were Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, Fight Club, and Wayne's World. Three of my favorite movies of all time. And you'd think I would get bored with those three movies, but I never did. They all were so rewatchable, and Wayne's World factors into it. But I love these movies. I love the Wayne's World characters and all that. It's all so much fun. So yeah, awesome pick, of course, but we totally sort of matched on this one, I guess. Excellent. I can say.
All right. Well, since that bounces it back to me for my number two pick, I went with one of my all-time absolute favorite Tarantino movies, and that would be Reservoir Dogs. I know we've talked about Reservoir Dogs before, but this is one that hit real hard in terms of, like, writing. The dialogue alone, and this is, like, for a lot of this movie, it is for a violent, gory heist type film. This is a very dialogue talking head kind of a movie, which really lends to the story, really lends to the idea of the writing. And this is how you make the movie. This is how you make a movie on the cheap, if you will, because there's not a lot of special effects. It's really like, here's a warehouse, and it's all like the guys showing up afterwards, and you're getting the pieces of the story as they're explaining things. It's so good how they did that. The acting and all that stuff is great, but it's like the opening of the movie, the way the opening of the movie starts with the monologues, and like, it's, you're just like completely enraptured into what these guys are saying. And you're just like, oh, I can't wait to see how this heist goes. And you don't, the heist happens off screen, and then you get all the story filled in. It's crazy how good that it's just the idea of how it was put together is just brilliant. I still cannot hear the song Stuck in the Middle with You without like flashbacks of this movie. Just because of the scene, when Michael Madsen cuts the cop's ear off. But yeah, you know, it's just, it automatically makes me think of this movie. But no, I absolutely love Reservoir Dogs. It's so good. It's one of my favorite Tarantino films. If it's probably like Kill Bill is my favorite, Reservoir Dogs probably is that number two slot. So.
Nice. And we haven't done our top five Tarantino films, so that's,
I know, but he has such a small list that I feel like we need to let him get like one more movie out before we like tackle it. So
I mean, he's only gonna do one more movie, so I guess that's something to keep in mind.
I know.
No, Reservoir Dogs, awesome movie. This is one that should make my list, but it's just one of those movies I saw later in life. And like I said, the six-year-old in me kept hearkening back to these old movies that I grew up with. But amazing film. I love that this film was just so innovative when it comes to like the writing you were talking about, Drew. When it comes to the music choices, like the Stuck in the Middle with You part and the rest of the movie music in the movie. This is just an amazing film. And great call. It's hard to add too much from what you were saying, but great film, and honestly should have made my list. This one's just amazing. So
yeah, all right, man, what do you got?
Yeah, so my final pick of the night has already been mentioned, actually, so I don't have too much to say otherwise, but I went with Batman Returns, my number one favorite movie from 1992. I love this movie. Something about, I don't know what it is.
I was not expecting it to be your final pick of the night. So
yeah, and I don't know if I did either, but when I put together my list, that's just kind of the way things fell into place. And I don't know if it's just the mood I've been in lately or what it is, but the older I get, I feel like I enjoy and appreciate Tim Burton like more and more, like his kind of like his crazy cartoony take on things. Like I really, really appreciate, and I don't know. I love Batman Returns. It's another one of those movies that's super rewatchable, and we've already talked about it, so I don't want to go too on, but it's such a fun, such a cool movie. And again, it's one of those movies that I think about a lot, like a lot of those character beats, a lot of those like kind of like almost like gross out beats, whether it be with like the Penguin or Catwoman and stuff. Like those are things that you think about all the time. And I just love this one. So there you go. Batman Returns.
All right, man. That's awesome. All right. So, and then my final one of the night is probably my favorite movie of the entire year. And one of my favorite movies of all time. It's a movie that I stop like if it's on TV, it's like an automatic watch. I have seen this movie countless times because of that. And it's so well put together. And this is A Few Good Men. I know I've talked about this movie a lot. I mean, you could talk about the casting with, you know, whether it's Tom Cruise or Jack Nicholson, Kevin Pollak, Demi Moore, Kevin Bacon, Kiefer Sutherland, Cuba Gooding Jr., Noah Wiley. Like the cast is so massive in this movie, and a lot of them they're still young in their careers. And then you throw in the masterpiece writing from Aaron Sorkin. And that's the thing that really hit me with this movie. And I didn't know this was an Aaron Sorkin movie when I fell in love with it. It was just a really good movie. If you've never seen Few Good Men, yeah, if you've never seen this movie, it's literally about two Marines that, killed a guy on base, and they get, you know, arrested, and they go to trial for murder. The catch is that they claim there's this argument that they were following orders, which means they weren't at fault because they were doing a job that they were given to do. So the person who issued the order would technically be the guilty party. So that's where the case lies in. That's where the mystery falls. Who did it? Who said what? It's a phenomenal story. It started as a off-Broadway play that turned into a film and launched Aaron Sorkin's career. And then if you look up Aaron Sorkin, you look at some of the stuff he's written, you'll be blown away. I absolutely love this movie. I don't know if you have any thoughts on it. I've talked about this before, so I don't know honestly what if I have too much more to add to what I've already said in the past, but everyone should watch this movie. It's so good. Anything from you?
Yeah, this is another one where it's hard to add too much, but it's just an amazing film. I love this film a lot too. It's one of those movies that I think it's not like a lot of the movies on my list were like movies I watch over and over again. And this one for me is almost like one of those like every couple years I have to watch it. But then you just appreciate it for like how great of a movie it is. The writing, the acting, like such amazing performances by all the actors in the movie. And just a great story. So this is an awesome final pick. It made my short list. It almost made my list, but again, like my inner child just wanted me to pick Fern Gully for this list instead. So
yeah, I get it.
but definitely an awesome pick to go out on. So nice.
What are you giving me for next week?
Yeah. Next week. This one's kind of a weird list. I don't believe we've done this before, but I think this one would be pretty fun to talk about. A long time ago, we did our top five favorite network sitcoms. And when I say a long time ago, I feel like this was the third or fourth episode of our podcast. So yeah. I thought it would be fun to go into like a sitcom realm again. And what I was thinking is we could do our top five favorite sitcom characters. I thought that would be pretty fun. So, and this one's kind of cool because like, let's say you're not the biggest fan of Seinfeld, but you really love Kramer as a character. He could make your list this time where you might not get a chance to talk about him, you know, on like our top five favorite sitcoms list in general. So I thought that'd be kind of a cool angle to it. But I don't know if you have any thoughts on this one, Drew, but I just thought this would be kind of a fun topic.
This is a great topic. This is great for conversation. I think this is going to be a difficult list to put together, to be completely honest. I feel like I'm going to miss something, and I'm going to miss a character. Oh. I'm going to go, oh, crap, I should have thought about that. Like, you're going to say something, and I'm going to go, oh, shoot, I should have thought about that. And then I'm going to be like,
that's like every list for me.
Oh, okay.
No, it's all like right, every well, list, like the next day I'm like, crap, I should have put this on my list, but it is what it is. But I think it will make for a good discussion, you know?
No, this is actually a really great poll. So we haven't done a TV-centric one in a while. Yeah, all right, man. Sounds good.
For sure.
That brings us to the end of the show. Do you want to toss this one in the can? And
yeah, let's go for it.
See you next week. Yeah, absolutely. All right, everyone, do us all a favor. Check out our website, top5report.com. There you'll find links to our social media, along to the link to our email, top5report@gmail.com. You can interact with the show there. We are on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Amazon, Audible. You can subscribe to us in those places. If you do, you will not miss a single episode. You will also, you can also leave us a review. We love those 5 stars, but we understand criticism because it helps us get better and it makes the words we say feel important. You can follow me personally on Twitter and Instagram at Drew3927. Peter, what about you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at NinjaPierre. And that's where I'll be talking about how you can have your pills that allow you to breathe underwater. For me, I'll stick to my gillyweed. And if you don't know what gillyweed is, just wait for the Triwizard Tournament. That's all I'm going to say.
Well, all right. Everybody, for the Top 5 Report, I'm Drew.
I'm Peter.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.